Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and thank you for joining us today. Our topic today is the Ken and Barbie killers in Toronto, Canada, back in the late 1980s. Paul Bernardo and his partner at the time, Carla Homolka. Is that how we say her name, Brandy?
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll call her Carla from now on.
Yeah, we'll call her Carla from now on. But anyway, we were just talking off air that these people are not, none of us like them very well. Even though they're both attractive, and generally we like attractive people.
As opposed to the guy we did last time that walked through the town and shot up the town, you know, we didn't really dislike that guy all that much.
No. But you know, if you got a really hot woman who's a killer, you know, I'm going to usually
typically
give her,
you lean toward sympathy.
That's how I used to choose winners on American Idol. Whoever's the hottest woman,
I choose them by boob size.
Yeah. Yeah, each of them. Okay, so, but these folks, we all agree that we don't like, right? I think we're all in agreement. We don't like these people.
We're not their biggest fans.
No, so.
The devil probably likes them.
So we try to be fair and balanced, just like Fox News, but if we're a little bit impartial.
But not different. No. No, we don't. We don't try that at all.
Okay, let me introduce our panel. Joining me is the very lovely and talented, the woman who really has. Set the standard for women in podcasting. She has been recognized by many different organizations. National Organization of Women recently came out. Well, they condemned her, but
they recognized her.
And that is the...
It's a misunderstanding.
Mr. Samin, the Empress of Evil, Satan's Dirty Little Secret, Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm good, Timmy. How are you?
I'm fine. You recommended this topic, and I want to say that when I did the research on this thing, I was sick of these people about halfway through.
You scoffed at this topic.
It's an interesting
story.
It's an interesting story, but I don't like these people at all.
You were condescending to the devil when she...
Yes, thank you.
You know, I like older stories, right? I like stories in the 40s and 50s. So when we do something that was recently as the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, and I have to go back and check when these things occurred, but
late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, you know, I like the older stories, but after I got into reading, it's really fascinating. They're really creepy people, and so we'll get into all their dastardly deeds. But before we do,
let's call them peccadillos.
Peccadillos, okay. I'd also like to introduce a man of many talents, a man who. Was the 1992 People Magazine Sexiest Man Alive. 1992 was a slow year.
No, you were not.
It was Screech was number two. So.
Yeah, I don't know. No.
I got the magazine cover at home.
Please let me bring it in for you. I'd love to see it.
Yeah. Let me introduce the very honorable, the very talented, the most dangerous man in podcasting today, the Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Oh, I couldn't be better, Timmy. Couldn't be better.
I didn't realize you were named Sexiest Man Alive by People Magazine.
Neither did People Magazine.
It was one of those things that you could, apparently, you know, you go into the I believe we was in Gatlinburg.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You can get the cover made.
And yeah, you stick your head through the little hole.
And, yeah, and they take your picture, and it's the sexiest man alive. Yeah, okay. But I'm doing good. I got, you know, I'm working on a migraine today, Timmy. That's always fun. That. But I want to, you know, I've been reading the comments people put on our page, and I've become a little scared. I think our listeners are somewhat disturbed.
Why do you say that, Colonel?
Well, it's not so much our listeners, it's our... My son secretly listens to, I found out, occasionally he'll listen to our podcast.
Okay.
Logan, my youngest.
Right.
The boy. And he listened to the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And he came
in... The one on Evelyn Dick?
No.
Not the last one. The
shooter.
Oh,
the
okay.
shooter. UNRRA.
UNRRA, okay.
And I said, yeah, that was some sick son of a bitch. Could you imagine, you know, you just sitting there in a barber chair, a guy walks in and shoots you in the head. You know what the boy said to me?
What?
He said, that's why you got to be clear. You can't just say, take some off the top.
Well, he's got a point. He's got a point.
Wow. He should be honest. Like, that was a 10-year-old boy that got shot. He's like, well... His communication skills.
Things happen, yeah. So really, you're disturbed about your own son. Not our
well, I'm a little more, right. yeah. But our listeners are a little disturbed, too.
Our listeners are awesome.
Yeah, they are.
They are awesome, but they're as disturbed as you
See,
are.
See, I don't even qualify that. I just...
You know the thing about UNRRA we didn't get into, or I forgot to mention when we were talking about him shooting that little boy in the...
on the rocking chair.
On the rocking chair. There's a picture of that rocking chair online.
Or the rocking horse? Sorry.
The rocking horse. Yeah. The rocking horse. It was a rocking horse in a barbershop used to cut kids' hair. And UNRRA, you know, walked into the barbershop and he shot the barber and he shot the kid. And the blood splattered all over this rocking horse. It was a white rocking horse. Well, you can actually see that online if you would want to.
It's like Abe Lincoln's chair.
Gross. And that's what I get into when I was doing these research for Kenan, this story, the Kenan Barbie killers, is that these things are, it's easy to, you know, I try not to look at the crime scene photos because that makes it a little bit, because we're going to make fun of these stories. We're going to not make fun of the victims, but we're going to make fun of the killers. But sometimes when you see the crime scene photos,
are some nasty individuals.
Yeah, and the stuff is really sick. We make fun of them, but in real life, it's, you know, when you realize just how horrific some of these things are, it's... That makes you take a step back. And I felt that way when doing the research on this this topic. But before we get into that, do we have any shout-outs, Colonel?
I got a couple shout-outs. as always, Lady Beverly.
Mm-hmm.
Brittany Nicole, congratulations to you, girl. We're Facebook friends now. Occasionally, listeners will send me a Facebook.
Is that why you're congratulating her? Because you're Facebook friends?
No. Occasionally, listeners will send me a Facebook request, friend request. And me and Brittany Nicole and I are Facebook friends. And I noticed a post today that she got the nursing position that she had applied for.
Wonderful.
Nurse position.
Great.
So congratulations to you, Brittany.
Congratulations,
Nicole.
Brittany.
Cool. Erica, shout out to you. She's got a picture coming. Let's see who else. And then of course we got who was a little bit seriously under the weather. Dottie was not as well as we wanted her to be.
Yeah, but she's doing better now.
She's trying to kill her.
Well, no. Timmy, why are you doing that?
Well, I'm not doing anything. She caught the bug that I had. Unfortunately, my brother also had it, and she was sick, and we had to take her to, you know, she had to go to the urgent care, but she's feeling better now.
She had to get a transfusion, Timmy.
No, she did not. That's not true. She had to get some strong antibiotics.
Put her in an isolation tent?
Yeah, they had to. Dottie's the girl in a plastic bubble.
Yeah, she's had a rough year so far.
When you want to come over and live with the Colonel and Mrs. Colonel and Rudy... we'd be happy to take you in because this boy's just gonna do you in before.
Look, I got Disney on Ice tickets. Let's get this going.
You have Disney on Ice for today?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
So is like Goofy's gonna be there, and
I assume
Mickey Mouse.
There are
Minnie?
All kinds of Disney characters.
Let me check and see what kind of panties that Minnie. Does she wear a thong?
Minnie?
She wears bloomers.
Well, you know why her and Mickey broke up.
Mm-mm.
You gonna tell us? Why, Colonel?
You know, don't you, Doug? You know the punchline to this, don't you, Doug?
Please.
Because she was just fucking goofy.
I thought it was because...
That's one of my favorites.
I heard that he was, like, pulling on her ears, but I don't know. That's rumors.
How come Goofy can do stuff that Pluto can't?
You know, I'm not sure the whole value of Pluto, really. What's his thing? What does he have to offer?
I'll ask him tonight when I see him in Disney on Ice that I'd like to get to, if we can move this along. This
what time is Disney on Ice start?
7:30.
The ice is going to melt by the
in
time.
Lexington.
Okay. Oh, so you got a two-hour drive as well. Okay, I want to give a shout-out to Sydney, who's made some really nice comments about us, and she's from the last podcast on the left page. And thank you, Sydney, for your kind comments.
Sydney had a great comment on our page the other day.
Yeah.
So much.
We're getting a lot of cool folks following us now, and we really appreciate it. So please, after you listen to the show, if you would leave comments, we love reading them. We read everyone. So if you go to our Facebook page and leave a comment about podcasts, your thoughts on it, we would appreciate it because we check them all out.
And Timmy, do you do this? When people make comments on our page, will you hit their profile page just to see who...
No, I don't do the creeping like you do.
I don't think... I always wondered, do you consider that creeping? Or yes. Do you consider it...
Yeah, I consider it creepy.
It's a person makes a comment, you're interacting with them. I don't know that there's...
Well, I mean, if you're interacting with them, it might be different, but I don't go do research on everyone that looks
at
the page.
Well, it's
not
research, for Christ's sake. We don't even research the damn shows we do.
I don't go by what you consider creepy either, because...
And also, shout out to Mary Ray.
Don't trust it.
And Brandy McKenzie, thank you for listening. Francis, thanks for listening. We're going to try to spread these shout outs throughout the different podcasts so we don't overwhelm you on every episode. But I would also like to give one to Michael Bertsall. He follows us. So thank you all. We appreciate it. We love you. And thanks for listening.
And we got to give one to Celine just for being from Michigan.
Oh, Celine. Yeah. Of course, Celine. Celine and I are our Facebook friends.
Just for being from Michigan and spending $200 at Barnes & Noble.
Did she? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Celine's cool. I like Celine. Okay, let's get into the story of the Ken and Barbie killers. Paul Kenneth Bernardo and Carla, what did I say her last name was? Homolka. Okay, let's talk about him. Paul Kenneth Bernardo was born on August 27, 1964, in Toronto, Canada. So he's a few years younger than me. Born in Toronto. Ever been to Toronto, Colonel?
No.
It's a beautiful city. Expensive.
I'm planning to vacation there this year.
Oh, it's a beautiful city. So he was a Canadian serial killer and rapist. And he also was known, besides committing the murders, he was known to be involved with his wife, getting his wife involved, Carla. She got involved with his dastardly deeds. And they became this little dysfunctional little couple who went around raping and torturing and killing young women. So, as
but, you
I
know,
said, not one of my favorite stories in terms of they're not very good people.
But she, but you got to admit, I mean, she was a dutiful wife.
She's a crazy bitch.
She was
dutiful.
I mean, he wanted to try some other women, and she said, "Yes, let me help you out here."
Yeah, including her sister. So.
Well, yeah, that's kind of crossing the line.
Yeah, so Paul was born into a wealthy family. And the reason why they call them Ken and Barbie killers, if you, haven't figured it out, is they were kind of from well-to-do families, and they were, they were very attractive. They both looked like models.
I'd do it,
she was shocking. They both were, very good-looking. And so it makes this whole thing even stranger. But anyway... not that, only ugly people should kill, but, ugly
people... I think that is kind of what you're saying.
Ugly people have more reason. Let's face it. We have more reason to kill than
someone really attractive. You walk around pissed off all the time.
If you're hot and you've got a lot of money, you really shouldn't be going around killing people. I mean, think about it. But anyway, his mother, Paul, was born into a wealthy but dysfunctional family. His mother, Marilyn... she had been adopted by an attorney in Toronto, and they were raised in the household. His father, Kenneth, was a son of an English immigrant
Son of a preacher, man.
And he had a successful marble and tile business. And after he got done with the laying the marble and tile, who would they call, Colonel?
Well, after they got done calling them with the marble and tile, they had to get the drywall up, and then they had to get the painting, and then they call our friend
Bob Mears. Bob Mears, yeah.
Yes, they would.
He would go all the way from Delaware up to Toronto to paint their house.
Yeah, that's nothing. It's a short hop and skip.
Anyway.
Nice point.
Thank you for the product placement there. His father was abusive.
That's surprising. But if you look at a picture of the guy, he looks like a little prick. You need to abuse him. He looks like
Part of the reason was his mother had him got pregnant with him while she was having an affair.
She was a slut.
Well, I know. Too. I don't want to say she was a slut.
She was a little loose in the caboose.
Just saying that she had an extramarital affair, and she
pretty much makes her a hoe.
I'm not passing judgment on her.
Timmy's the last one to pass judgment on anything.
Because she's a lot. Probably maybe still alive and can sue us. So if you want to get sued by her, you can pass judgment.
She had a bastard child.
Yeah, he's legitimate.
Which is, but what I'm saying, it's one thing to have an affair.
Right.
You know, that's one thing. The colonel don't make no judgment on that. But wrap that sumbitch up, because you can't...
Wrap that rascal.
Wrap it, because you coming home to your husband, he don't need to pick up no chlamydia or... What's some of the other ones?
Syphilis,
gonorrhea, or a child that he got to raise now because you was, you know.
Well, apparently he accepted this child, at least on paper. He became the biological, he was listed as a biological father. But Kenneth, his dad, was arrested in 1975 when Paul was only 11 years old for molesting a child. So
gross.
He sexually abused one of his own daughters.
So you got a mama who a hoe and a father who's a pedophile.
Yep.
And we expect his natural father.
His
environmental father.
His environmental father. Yeah. The mom became very depressed after the husband.
I bet.
Yeah, after the husband. Was arrested, and she withdrew from the rest of the family and lived in the basement. So she just packed up and moved
with the gimp.
Yeah, pretty much like I do, I guess.
So I guess she quit banging other guys and moved into the basement. And this had a profound effect on all the children, but especially young Paul, the youngest. He seemed to be doing okay with it. He was happy as a child. He smiled a lot. Well, you know, if you smile a lot.
He's,
killing birds.
Yeah.
No. He was the perfect child for his parents.
He was polite,
well-mannered, and he did well in school.
Good with a knife.
Later on, he takes a laugh.
And his wang.
Later on, he takes a laugh, but not yet. His parents got in an argument when he was 16, and his mother confessed to him after this argument, told him about his real parentage. And he became repulsed by that, openly calling his mom a slob and a whore.
See?
Oh.
And they're going to sue me.
A
slob and a whore. I wonder if she was an ugly woman or something.
I don't know. I've never seen a picture of her, but...
We're going to have to look that up.
Yeah. Okay, so... Bernardo graduated from Sir Wilfrid Laurier Collegiate Institute.
That's not a real place.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. And guess where he started working at?
Kroger.
No, worse. He started working for Amway. Yeah, he was an Amway salesman.
Hold on. The short story about Amway.
It's not a short story.
This guy, when Amway's first starting, this guy gets me on a pitch, right?
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know,
Amway's a kind of like a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
Right? That's how I would describe it.
That's really what it was. But it was supposed to be based on buying your groceries and products and whatever. And you get all these people over there. Now, I've got this guy coming over to my house, and he's going to make his presentation. I already know what it's about. And I tell him, you know what? I ain't going to do this. He's like, well, I haven't ever made a presentation before. Mm-hmm. You know, can I make one? So he brings his wife over to my house, and we have a couple refreshments, and we get to know him a little bit better.
Does this story end? Because
I'll tell you how the story ends.
All I can see is just Your pizza's here.
Well, no, that was a different story. I'll tell you that one after this. But
no, thank you.
So the guy is, he's a guy, he's got red hair.
Be careful.
I don't even remember his
be
name.
Careful.
He's got red hair. But
don't say nothing bad about Ginger.
And the reason I say that is because he's got extremely, extremely pale skin. He's an extremely pale skin guy. And he's making this presentation, and I quit pandering to the gingers. All right,
there are a significant portion of our audience has red.
They're not even a significant portion of the population, but there's nothing wrong with gingers. But anyway, this guy was your classic ginger, and he's trying to be very professional. He's got a suit on. His wife's got a suit on. There, you know.
Right.
And we don't know him from anybody. And he's about halfway through the presentation.
And you're, like, trying to get out of this thing.
Well, I'm falling asleep.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the guy tears off. The guy breaks wind in my dining room.
He was nervous.
During his presentation?
During his presentation.
He was nervous.
Now,
his heart.
Now, the colonel trying to keep himself together. I'm trying to not laugh. I'm trying to just like it. Well, what we're trying to do is do that thing where everybody pretend what just happened didn't happen.
Right.
Which we could have got away with, but the man turned redder than the hair on his head and looked at me and my wife and said, "Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry." And when he said that, the colonel had to drop his head down on the table and bang it against the table. I was laughing so hard.
Right.
And then I figured I could get this presentation over by saying, "What the hell, man? You come in here and stink up my house. What is wrong with you?" And that did shorten the presentation, and he wrapped it up and went on and on.
My brother sold Amway for a while, and he made us sit through one of his presentations, and that was torture. I mean, it was just torture. He didn't actually do it. He brought someone in who was showing him how to do it.
Yeah.
And it was like, he was out of work for a while, and he was, you know, when you fall out of work, you get in those get rich quick schemes. And he got pulled into this, and he was all secretive about it, right? He wouldn't tell us about it. He was like, no, I can't tell you. Just be here at this date and time. I can't tell you what it involves, but it's really big. And it was like, oh, it was torture, man. It was just like torture. I'm like, I want to shoot myself. I cannot. But anyway, they teach you sales techniques, right? Anyway.
But he did not break. But your brother break wind in your house.
No, he did not. No.
And this wasn't one of those little peepers. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
It was like
right.
I mean, it was disgusting.
Yeah, thanks for the sound.
It was foul.
Okay. So anyway, but they teach you like. Techniques, right? They teach you like sales techniques.
Right.
Well, Bernardo, Paul, and his friends started using these on girls in the bars, and they were successful at it. But I think probably if you're good looking,
it's not hard to sell.
And you might have a hard time.
Well, not back in the day. Not back in 1992, I didn't have to make sales techniques. Basically, I just sat at the bar and let them come to me, Timmy.
They lined up.
Yeah. I wasn't old enough to go to a bar.
I had one person. Huh?
I wasn't even old enough to go to a bar.
But that don't mean you wasn't sliding around the pole in the bar.
It does mean that.
When did you start working in a bar? How old were you?
I never worked in a bar.
Oh, so we're going to... Okay, that's how we're going to play it to our audience.
He means like, you know, as an entertainer.
And did you start entertaining in the
bars? I got your air buddy entertainer. I got it.
Okay, so that's how we're going to play this. You was never a stripper in a bar.
Okay,
whatever.
Yeah.
Good one.
So in October of 1987, when you were like, what, nine?
They couldn't afford to hire me. They'd have to reinforce all the poles.
That is not nice.
What?
In October of 1987.
87, I was in the seventh grade.
All right. Paul met Carla Pomaca. Or however the hell you say her
name. Let's just call her Carla.
Because I don't even know how you pronounce her damn name. Once these people get regular names.
Why can't we do a story
on someone named Smith?
There's only one Carla in the damn story. We don't need to give her last name.
All right. But anyway, they became sexually interested in each other almost immediately.
Did they sniff each other's butts
or
something?
They ordered pizza.
Did he hump his leg?
They were doing the dirty. Unlike the girls he had met before, Carla encouraged his sadistic and sexual behavior. So he had a little sadistic side to him, our good friend Paul. She encouraged his acts, and he became known, we'll get into this in a bit later, as a Scarborough rapist.
Oh.
We can get known in that minute. But let me tell you a little bit about Carla first. Carly Leanne Homolka was born on May 4th, 1970, which, of course, is 5 days before my birthday,
Colonel. Her mom was pregnant.
6 days before Brandy's
during
birthday.
During the holidays.
And her mother was pregnant during the
holidays. I guess. Do they have Christmas in Canada?
Yeah, I think they do. They have Boxer Day, too.
Yeah. Boxer Day right after that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the day after. She was born in Port Credit, Ontario, Canada. I bet she's probably been in the strip clubs up in Windsor. Man, they got some nice strip
I bet club. She has.
Yeah. Carla was the eldest of her eldest of three daughters born to her parents. I'm not going to tell her parents' name because no one cares, right? Her sisters, but this is kind of important. Her sisters was Lori, who was born in 1971. So she was a year older than Lori and 5 years older than her sister Tammy, who was born in 1975. Now, Tammy comes into play later on in this story in a terrible way. The family lived in a place called St. Catharines, Ontario, when Carla was growing up. She worked part-time at a pet shop, and she attended Sir Winston Churchill Secondary School. So, shout out to all the students there at Sir Winston Churchill Secondary School. After graduation in 1988, she was hired by the Thoroy Veterinarian Clinic.
By the what?
I don't know. So some veterinary clinic in Canada.
She's working on dogs.
She started working as a veterinary assistant. Now, this comes into play because she had access to drugs as a vet assistant.
Oh, yeah.
She took a similar job at the Martindale Animal Clinic. That's not the Martindale.
Not Wink Martindale.
Not Wink Martindale.
It's not Wink Martindale. And it's not the Martin. What was the name? Wasn't that Martindale? Where the child abuse occurred?
Oh,
preschool?
Yeah.
Not Martindale. This is a different place.
I think I cleared that up.
Yeah, well.
Martindale Animal Clinic up in Ontario, from which she sold drugs that would be used later in their crimes.
Well, you know, the animals, the dogs and the horses get the best drugs.
Yeah, they do.
If you get tranquilizers, get a horse tranquilizer. That will chill you out.
You know, I read in South America, they use those for street drugs, horse tranquilizers.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, they show. I saw a documentary. And these guys would walk around. I mean, they're like zombies.
I
don't know the name of the drug.
And one is ketamine or something like that.
Yeah.
But kind of interesting is that they're using it now. They're trying to figure out a way. It's the most potent antidepressant that they have found.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it's potent. It knocks on a horse.
People will take it. They'll be zombied out for an entire day, but they'll come out and they'll be snapped out of this.
But while they're zombied out, they're not depressed.
So afterwards, when
you're
they come
it's
out,
it's like almost like a shock, electroshock therapy.
Yeah, it's very much like that. But they're trying to figure out a way to get this to work
without the without the having the effect of making people.
Why would you know that?
Huh?
Why would you know anything like that?
He actually knows a lot, R. Charles.
Well,
he makes things up.
It came about because all of a sudden, you know, they had a bunch of antsy, nervous horses, so they gave them the tranquilizers, and all of a sudden you had the horses the next day they was prancing around in the field all happy.
They did that horse laugh.
All I'm saying, why do you know that? Why do you know this information?
Because I read stuff. I get Psychology Today and
do
things
you?
Like that. Yeah.
He's all right. Anyway, Carla met Paul at the Scarborough restaurant on October 17th, 1987. Now, this is right before Halloween of that year.
Mm-hmm.
While they were both attending a convention in Toronto. I don't know what kind of convention. I guess a potential serial killer.
Yeah, sexual deviant.
Yeah, whatever.
We're due there this year, by the way. We're keynote speakers.
Yeah.
She was 17, and he was 23, so there was a few years difference, but not much. He proposed to her on December 24th, 1987. Now, as you know, December 24th is generally considered Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, 2 days before Boxer Day.
I'm going to tell you one thing. That's bullshit right there.
My parents got married on Christmas Eve.
You don't see, that's a way of getting out of buying a Christmas gift.
Yeah, it was very clever.
When you give the engagement ring on Christmas Eve, no.
The
engagement ring's got to be separate from Christmas.
This is from a man who is a kept man.
Mm-hmm.
See, for most of us, other humans,
mm-hmm.
other guys, that, you know, we have to plan for things like that. You sound like a woman now.
I went out and bought the Mrs. Colonel's engagement ring, and we got. It was in July, and I did not know. We had not discussed marriage. Mm-hmm. We had not talked about marriage. And I proposed to Mrs. Colonel. Bought the ring.
She said no.
How did it turn out?
She
said no first.
Surprisingly said no. That's when I tried to date her. She said no three times. Then she finally gave in to the Colonel charm. And horse and sedatives were involved there. Right. And, you know, once I untied her and got her drunk, she had a good time.
A little chloroform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never hurt nobody.
All right. So, anyway, that is how Paul met Carla and their love began to blossom.
So very, very exciting for everybody. So, Paul committed multiple sexual assaults between May of 87 and July of 1990. These attacks escalated in viciousness in and around Scarborough, Ontario. Most of the assaults were on young women whom he had stalked after they exited buses late in the evenings.
Yeah, see, it's dangerous taking a bus.
Well, I know. You take your life in your hands every day, don't you?
And the crazy thing about this is, you know, what I always, and I've read about these people, is that he's married mm-hmm. now to a...
I think he's engaged. Yeah, engaged.
To an extremely... willing, submissive,
and beautiful.
Beautiful woman. Yeah, and it just proves my point that
it's a greedy bastard.
It doesn't matter if you serve filet mignon every night. Mm-hmm. You want to have a shrimp cocktail every once in a while, don't you?
All right. So on May 4th, 1987,
he was getting a shrimp cocktail every other day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, these are, you know, May 4th of 87, Bernardo committed his first rape in Scarborough against a 21-year-old woman in front of her parents' house after following her home. The attack lasted more than a half an hour. So I don't know what he was doing, but it took a half hour.
Well.
No, because surely they're not doing foreplay. So, you know, half hour, give me a break.
Well, I mean, it takes you... a good 10 minutes to get somebody tied up, right?
Maybe she was doing full play.
Yeah, maybe she was doing full
gross. Play. Gross. May 14th, 1987, Bernardo committed his second rape. He attacked a 19-year-old woman in the backyard of her parents' house. That incident lasted over an hour.
Damn, man.
July 27th of 87, Bernardo attempted a rape, and although he beat the young woman, he abandoned the attack after she fought back.
And one of the things
he's a creepy bastard.
One of the reasons these rapes are taking so long, and again, I read a book about these two idiots, so is he liked to beat them first.
So now he's the foremost authority.
No, it's just, you know, why
should let him do the research and write the script?
I'm just saying, just because I know some, I read the damn book now.
Yeah, he was.
But he liked to beat on.
Yeah, he was a
he's
dick.
Gross. Okay, so, he abandoned this one when she fought back. So he was not only was he a dick, he was a pussy too.
Yeah,
that was uncalled for and ugly. My bad.
No, I think you're right. He was a bully, and when someone stood up to him, he runs away.
He didn't like that.
All right.
December 16th of 87, he finally gets to commit his third rape against a 15-year-old girl.
Ugh.
This rape lasted an hour, and the following day, the Toronto Police Service issued a warning to women in the Scarborough area traveling alone at night, especially those that were taking buses. December 23rd, 1987, there's another rape. During this attack, Bernardo rapes the 17-year-old with a knife he used to threaten his victims. It was at this point that he began to be referred to as a Scarborough rapist.
He used a knife to rape her, or he just used a knife in the assault?
Yeah, they used it in the assault.
Okay.
Gross. April 18th, 1988, so he waited a little while. Had a little cooling off period.
Yeah, cooling off, yeah.
Well, I mean, these are reports. These are, again, rapes that were reported. So, right. I mean, there could
have
been
some that weren't reported. Bernardo attacked a 17-year-old girl. This one lasted 45 minutes.
Nice.
May 25th of 88, Bernardo was nearly caught by a uniformed Metro Toronto investigator staking out a bus shelter. The investigator noticed him hiding under a tree and pursued him on foot, but Bernardo escaped. No. So he's hiding underneath, like, you can't see me. Like an owl.
I'm a squirrel.
Yeah.
Just too bad.
You don't see me.
It's always, when we talk about these stories, serial killers.
I am not the rapist you want.
There's always one or two close calls where if the guy, if they had been just been caught, you know.
Right.
It could have saved tragedy.
May 30th of 88, Bernardo committed his sixth rape, this time in Clarkson, about 25 miles southwest of Scarborough. He attacked an 18-year-old, and it lasted 30 minutes. October 4th of 88, Bernardo attempted another Scarborough rape. His intended victim fought him off, but he inflicted two stab wounds to her thigh and buttocks, which required 12 stitches.
Ooh, stabbed in the buttocks.
Yeah, you can't sit down, man, after that.
No.
You know, you say what you want about the guy, but he did not have the premature ejaculation problem.
Clearly. November 16th of 88, Bernardo committed rape against an 18-year-old in the backyard of her parents' house. November 17th of 88, Metro Police formed a special task force dedicated to capturing the Scarborough rapist. December 27th, so he let the Lord's Day be the Lord's Day.
Well, yeah. He probably banged Carla around real good.
That was his anniversary.
Well, an alerted neighbor chased Bernardo off after he begun to attempt his eighth rape. Then he would take a long break. On June 20th of 1989, Bernardo attempted to rape another young woman. She fought against him, and her screams alerted neighbors. And Bernardo fled with just scratches to his face. August 15th of 89, Bernardo committed another rape against a 22-year-old woman. He'd stalked her the previous night from outside the window of her apartment and waited for her to arrive home. This was a particularly vicious attack, and it lasted about 2 hours.
Oh, holy God.
November 21st, 1989, again, he raped a 15-year-old whom he saw in a bus shelter.
I hope this man was bringing some lube with him, because if he was going for 2 hours, they was probably getting raw and sore. Well,
this attack lasted 45 minutes.
They're beating. I mean,
at least polite.
Maybe it's not all sexual. Maybe it's some of it's,
He was making him watch movies? What?
Beating, or, I mean, yes. Who knows? He's
they screened Rocky real quick.
He's a bit of a deviant, so it's hard to tell what he was doing the whole time.
On November 22nd, 89, Bernardo committed rape against a 19-year-old. This attack occurred in the stairwell of an underground parking lot and lasted 30 minutes.
Now he's switching it up.
How do you stay in an underground parking lot? You're on the steps of an underground parking lot. Ain't nobody coming to get your car?
Yes, maybe it's so.
Then we wait a while, and on May 26, 1990, Bernardo committed his 11th rape. This rape lasted over an hour. However, his 19-year-old victim's vivid recollection of her attacker permitted police to make a computer composite photograph, which was released 2 days later by police and published in the Toronto area newspapers. In July of 1990, 2 months after receiving tips that Bernardo fit the Scarborough rapist composite, he was interviewed by two police detectives. So he's just raping people left and right.
Yeah, and his Carla at this point doesn't know about it.
Yeah, she doesn't know what's going on yet.
So between May and September of 1990, the police had submitted more than 130 suspect samples for DNA testing when they received two reports that the person they were seeking was Paul Bernardo. The first, in June, had been called in by a bank employee. The second call was received from Tina Smirnas, the wife of one of three Smirnas brothers, who were among Bernardo's closest friends.
And they were the flying Smirnas, weren't they, in the circus?
I think they did something. Or they walked tight ropes. I don't remember. Yeah. Smirnas told the detectives that Bernardo had been called in on a previous rape investigation once in December 1987, but he'd never been interviewed. He frequently talked about his sex life to the brothers. He liked analingus.
I want to go on record. I'm opposed to
that. I believe that's called tossing the salad.
Yeah, he's
I am opposed to tossing the salad.
Which, by the way...
Hold on. Are you opposed to tossing or having the salad tossed?
Either way, it's off limits.
This would make him very popular in prison later, though.
Yeah, skills that he might put to use when he gets shipped away.
So he enjoys that rough sex and the anal sex. Ooh. Which I want to put on record that I am opposed to.
We are both opposed to that.
I am opposed to anything having to do with the Dirty Flower. I don't like it.
Exit only.
I'm against it.
Exit only.
I am more of a free spirit. the Colonel's more of an open-minded man. So
really?
Well, I'm just saying, I'm not, you know, everybody has their own peculiar taste, and if they happen to like that.
Who am I to say
that they should not?
It's our job to judge. It's what we do every day.
Yeah, well, that's
it's my hobby.
It's kind of our whole podcast.
Colonel like hitting a dirty flower once in a while? Ain't nothing wrong with it.
I don't like hitting it. Or you
moving
like
on.
Hitting a dirty flower.
That's it. What I meant was, if people like to hit the dirty flower, then I'm in full support of your right to do that.
Moving on.
What if they're hitting your dirty flower?
I can't. The Colonel completely opposed to that. 100% opposed to that.
I'm opposed to coming or going. How about you, Brandy?
No dirty flower. Off limits.
If you support Brandy and I, my position on the dirty flower, please let us know on Facebook.
Well, the Colonel supports
being a
pitcher, not being a catcher.
Well, I mean, other people can do it. I don't care about that. I'm saying for me, I'm out.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go and cast dispersions on someone if they enjoy that. I'm just saying, like you, it's not on my menu.
No. All right.
And Brandy's saying, not on my watch.
Well, and Brandy's menu is pretty damn long. I mean, it's like
Brandy's like a buffet over there.
Like Applebee's, man.
Wow. God.
All when right. Brandy says something's off limits, you know it's a hard limit because...
Alex Smyrnis is... All right. Okay, so Alex Smyrnis Busby, Tina's husband.
Right.
They decided his phrasing was awkward and stilted, and it consequently left detectives unsure of whether or not to take him seriously. But after cross-checking several files, the detectives decided to interview Bernardo.
You know, if you're a suspect and a rape victim, don't go around telling people you eat ass. That's just all I'm saying.
You know, and
it's probably that's a good life lesson, kids.
It is. And I wonder, is that like, do you eat the ass and then get like a breath saver, or do you brush your
teeth? I don't know if there's enough breath savers in the world.
You go around smelling like ass all day.
I don't know.
Well, would you insult your guest if you, you know, use mouthwash afterwards? Is that improper?
We're moving on.
All right.
Okay.
We're getting into uncharted waters here, Timmy.
It's always going to be uncharted territory for me.
Yeah. The interview on November 20th, 1990, lasted 35 minutes, and Bernardo voluntarily gave samples for forensic testing.
He jumped off right in the interrogating room.
I'd do this right now.
Give me a cup.
He did the money shot right on the table there.
Right. When detectives asked Bernardo why he thought he was being investigated for the rapes, he admitted he resembled the composite.
Mm-hmm.
I see. I can see it. Yeah, I look like that guy. Yeah. It's all right.
I can see a resemblance there around the eyes.
Detectives
And I do eat ass.
And I eat ass. Okay. But here, this is my favorite. Hold on. The detectives concluded that such a well-educated, well-adjusted, congenial young man couldn't be responsible for the vicious crimes. He was far more credible than Alex Smyrnis, who, with his awkward, strange way of speaking, just might have been trying to collect the reward. So Alex evidently is from Georgia or something.
He's from Russia, probably.
I don't know. So Paul Bernardo was released the following day.
He is being rapist.
Yeah, they didn't buy the story that he was. And again, another
his ass breath didn't give him away when he got in there.
Well, you also got the DNA. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand.
Well,
that's
just
I don't know how they missed.
So following the interview, Bernardo drove to nearby St. Catharines and held a secret meeting with Carla, assuring her that he was not the Scarborough rapist because you know
he's a big fat liar.
He wouldn't do that.
Liar, anal tongue on fire.
Anal tongue on fire, sure. Bernardo moved permanently to St. Catharines on February 1st, 1990. And surprisingly, then the sexual assaults in Scarborough stopped.
It's a coincidence.
However, on April 6th, 1991, Bernardo committed his 12th rape. This one in St. Catharines. Again, the victim was young.
So he's starting to do it in his new home.
Unlike the other attacks, this one occurred early in the morning and he was not near a bus stop. When she still worked at the pet shop 2 years earlier, Carla had befriended a then 15-year-old girl. On June 7, 1991, Carla invited the teen, referred to as Jane Doe, in the ensuing trials for a girls' night out. After an evening of shopping and dining, Carla took Jane Doe to 57 Baywood Avenue and began to ply her with alcohol laced with Halcyon?
It's the drug that she got from the vet.
After Jane Doe lost consciousness, Carla called Bernardo to tell him his surprise wedding gift was ready. They undressed the girl, who was a virgin, and Bernardo videotaped Carla as she raped the girl before Bernardo vaginally and anally penetrated her.
Yeah, so when he told Carla he wasn't the rapist, I don't think she would have cared at that point.
Yeah, right. The next morning, the teenager was nauseous. She believed her vomiting was due to having drunk alcohol for the first time. She did not realize she'd been violated. Okay, I'm going to stop right there for just a second because I'm sorry. If you're deflowered that way,
yeah,
I think you know.
Well, she was a kid. She never had done anything, and she was, you know, she probably.
Maybe don't you notice gentle. That your butt hurts?
Maybe he was gentle. Well, you know what?
Yes, he's known for being gentle.
It could be. That wasn't the first time she'd been dirty flowered.
And who knows? But she's a victim in all this.
Plus, she probably woke up hungover.
Yes, it might have been the first time she ever been drunk or drugged.
Mm-hmm. So her head was probably hurting more than anything else.
Yeah. But they pulled what's that guy's name? Bill Cosby on her, yeah.
Yeah, and that won't get us sued. Okay.
Well, have you ever seen, like, when they list the side effects of drugs like Xanax and things like that, it might say, could make your butt hurt?
No.
So you know Xanax is a rape drug in Thailand?
Really?
Yeah, it's banned in Thailand.
A rape drug?
Uh-huh.
But you can get Rohypnol from,
I don't know,
from any place?
Yeah.
All right.
I guess they use it for date rape.
She was invited back by Carla in August, this time to spend the night. Again, she was taken advantage of, and this time she stopped breathing after she was drugged and Bernardo had begun to rape her. Carla called 911 for help, but called back a few minutes later to say, everything's all right.
We're good.
She's breathing again.
Yeah, we're all right. The emergency crew was recalled without follow-up. Jane Doe visited the couple once more on December 22, 1992, this time, Carla pressured her to have sex with Bernardo, but she became upset and left.
You know, when you call 911, they have to send someone out in the United States. I worked at a suicide hotline.
Which is crazy to me, but go ahead.
And
That's
like Eeyore working at the suicide hotline.
You get a lot of calls. It wasn't suicide. You get all kind of shit. But anyway, we had a caller was high risk. And when we were high risk, this is back in the 90s, early 90s, you had to do a trace. And it's not like on TV where you just, they could just tell you who calls for a caller ID and all that. It was hard to trace it. They have to put a trap on. It was a whole deal. But anyway, we'd have to call the police, and they would get a hold of the operator, and then they would start tracking these calls. But we had an intern who I said, you know, I had this person on. I said, this is a high call and signal, you know, wrote a note and posted it or whatever. It said, you know, contact police. They called 911. 911 had to come to our center where we had the suicide hotline. They had to come around. I guess this big old mansion that this agency owned. They had to look around every room to make sure that everyone was okay in this. And we kept saying, we just needed you to trace this call. This guy's an idiot. But anyway, that's my story.
You don't yell at him for pointless stories.
It was relative to our story about 911.
I still have the image of Droopy Dog wearing a headset. Hello.
Okay, what's your problem? We used to have a lady who would call, and she would call just to see if she was alive. Because she was an old lady.
I do that.
Yeah,
sometimes
she was an old,
you have to check.
Yeah, she was an old lady. She lived alone. Middle of the night, she'd call just to hear someone's voice to see alive. And we used to go, hello? Hello? You know, no, just kidding.
Jump, do it. All right.
Go to the light.
Yeah. So by 1990, Bernardo was spending large amount of time with the Homolka family who liked him. He was engaged.
Well, that's not to like.
Clearly, I know. He was engaged to the eldest daughter and flirted constantly with the youngest one.
This is Tammy.
Yes. He had not known them. Oh, he had not told them that he'd lost his job as an accountant and instead was smuggling cigarettes across the nearby U.S.-Canadian border.
Oh, they tax the hell out of cigarettes up in Canada.
He became obsessed.
I don't think you can do that now. The security is so tight anymore.
He became obsessed with Tammy Homolka, peeping into her window and entering her room to masturbate while she slept.
Well, she was asleep. He didn't disturb.
Yeah, so it's not like
as long as you don't wake me up, we're in good shape.
Don't get in my hair.
Here's the thing. Carla helped him by breaking the blinds to her in her sister's window to allow Bernardo access.
That's what she does to my office. Brandy will. Every time she leaves my office, we got
she's
blinds.
She's got the blinds.
My blinds is open so she can peek in my office.
Yeah.
Why do you do that?
I believe she might be masturbating at you work, Timmy.
Not ever in my whole life.
I would hate to think you
would
that.
We would not judge you.
No, she likes to see.
You should judge
me. She wants to see if I'm sleeping in my office or something.
You should judge me.
But every time she leaves, my blinds are just a little askewed.
Yes. In July, Bernardo took Tammy across the border to get beer for a party. While there, Bernardo later told his fiancée they got drunk and they began making out.
See, here's the thing. Never leave the country with someone who sneaks in your bedroom in the middle of the night and masturbates over
there. Right.
Yeah.
That's a rule.
Don't cross country lines.
Yeah, don't cross the border. Lines,
but. According to Bernardo's testimony at his trial, on July 24th, 1990, Carla Homolka laced spaghetti sauce with crushed Valium she'd stolen from her employer at the Martindale Animal Clinic. She served the dinner to her sister, who soon lost consciousness. Bernardo began to rape Tammy while Carla watched.
This is, again, Carla's own sister. Five years.
They're an awesome couple.
Yeah.
Over the next summer.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Where he supplied Tammy and her friends with gifts, food, and sodas that had a film and a few white flecks on the top.
I'm telling you, if that guy's giving me something to drink, I'm not drinking it.
Yeah, that's... you want the chunky Coke or you want the... Yeah.
6 months before their 1991 wedding, Carla stole the anesthetic agent... Halothane from the clinic.
That's the horse drug right there.
On December 23rd, 1990, Homolka and Bernardo administered sleeping pills to the 15-year-old in a rum and eggnog cocktail. After Tammy was unconscious, Carla and Bernardo undressed her, and Carla applied a halothane-soaked cloth to her sister's nose and mouth. Halothane-soaked cloth to her sister's nose and mouth. Carla wanted to give Tammy's virginity to Bernardo for Christmas.
Yeah, as, the thing is, it's not hers to give.
Well, according to Carla, though, Bernardo was disappointed but not having been Carla's first sexual
partner. Oh, so yeah. Carla was a whore, so she's
making she was a hoback.
Yeah.
I'm guessing she has some jealousy toward her sister. That's a bit,
probably.
That's my guess.
With Tammy's parents sleeping upstairs, the pair filmed themselves as they raped her in the basement. Tammy began to vomit. The pair tried to revive her, and then they called 911, but not before they hid the evidence, dressed Tammy, and moved her into her basement bedroom. A few hours later, Tammy Homolka was pronounced dead at St. Catherine's General Hospital without having regained consciousness.
She was 15.
She was. Mm-hmm. Despite the pair's behavior, vacuuming and washing laundry in the middle of the night, and despite the presence of a chemical burn to Tammy's face, Niagara Regional Coroner and the Homolka family accepted the pair's version of events.
Just like the Keystone Cops.
I'm telling you, they're missing so many opportunities with these two.
The official cause of Tammy Homolka's death was accidental choking on her vomit after consumption of alcohol.
Yeah, they think she gets that drunk.
Do you watch the show Angie Tribeca?
No, but that's kind of what this sounds like, isn't it?
It sounds very much like that show.
The pair subsequently filmed themselves with Carla wearing Tammy's clothing and pretending to be her. They also moved out of the Homolka house to a rented Port Dalhousie bungalow to let her parents cope with their grief.
Oh, that was thoughtful of them.
Yeah, well, it's good stuff.
Early, I wonder if he tried to bang her at the layout. She
dressed up like Tammy and pretended to be her. Early in the morning on June 15, 1991, Bernardo took a detour through Burlington, halfway between Toronto and St. Catharines, to steal license plates where he found Leslie Mahaffey. The 14-year-old had missed her curfew after attending a funeral and was locked out of her house, and she'd been unable to find anyone with whom she could stay overnight. She missed her curfew after attending a funeral? That's kind of hardcore.
Yeah. I'm sure her parents had to live with that the rest of their life.
Bernardo approached her and told her he was looking to break into a neighbor's house. Unfazed, she asked him if he had any cigarettes. All right. You got to smoke?
You gotta smoke.
She was 14.
Here's the silverware. I need a cigarette.
Let's see. As Bernardo led her to his car, he blindfolded her, forced her into the vehicle, and drove her to Port Dalhousie, whatever, where he informed Carla that they had a playmate. Bernardo and Carla subsequently videotaped themselves torturing and sexually abusing Mahaffey, all while listening to Bob Marley and David Bowie. At one point, Bernardo said, "You're doing a good job, Leslie, a damn good job."
I wonder what Bob Marley tune he listened to.
No Woman, No Cry.
Maybe.
Then he added...
That's so bad.
Then he added, "The next 2 hours are going to determine what I do to you. Right now, you're scoring perfect."
Oh, she was like Nadia Comaneci.
Was she nailing the landings? What was she doing? What was she...
She was unconscious or something. I don't know.
You know who I liked was...
Then why was he talking to her?
Christy Yamaguchi. Man, she was
shocking hot. That you like Christy.
Who's the little
Dorothy Hamill?
No, the little girl. Mary Lou Retton.
That was a whole different sport.
Gymnastics? You don't Christy stick the landing in. Christy, I guess you stick the landing in ice skating and in gymnastics.
First of all, you two are making really bad metaphors out of two different things.
What about Michelle Kwan? She was a little too young.
Okay.
Who got hit in the knee?
Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding did. Now, Tanya Harding was hot.
Nancy Kerrigan.
She was a tramp.
Any girl that would get somebody to beat another girl with a stick.
Did you see the video of Tanya Harding of her honeymoon?
And ew.
She's got the spunk, her husband's spunk in her hand, and she's showing it to the camera. It was gross.
I did not watch that.
And yet you've seen it. So.
Oh, numerous times. We'll probably watch it again tonight. That's gross.
God. So
it's a favorite on my phone.
So this poor little girl was awake when they were doing all this to her. Because in another segment of the tape played at Bernardo's trial, the assault escalates. And Mahaffey cries out in pain and begs him to stop. In the state's description of the scene, he was sodomizing her while her hands were bound with twine.
For our listeners who may not know, sir, sodomizing is hitting the dirty flower.
Which we disapprove of. We disapprove of rape of any type, but especially the type that you're describing.
Okay.
Yeah, you're getting into a whole another level. This prison rape now.
Yeah, rape by itself is pretty sick, but especially anal rape is particularly harsh. Although we disavow any type of that sort of thing.
We are trying to separate ourselves from anal rape.
Yeah. Well, any type of rape. We condone it. We do not condone it.
I think you've been pretty clear. We need to put that on
the table. Got it.
Yeah.
All right.
Against rape, rape bad.
Right. Murder is bad, too.
Later, Mahaffey told Bernardo that her blindfold seemed to be slipping. an ominous development as it signaled the possibility that she might be able to identify both her tormentors if permitted to live.
Yeah, why would you do that? Who told it? Was it the victim that told him that, or was it Carl?
That's what it says.
Excuse me, my hands are a little bit loose.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
The following day, Bernardo claimed Carla fed her a lethal dose of Halcyon.
Halcyon.
Sorry. Homolka claimed that instead Bernardo strangled her. The pair put the body in their basement. But we can all agree that the little girl's dead, and they put the body in the basement.
There's some cracks in the partnership here.
Well, the thing is, we'll get into this a little bit later, but
Bernardo,
the punishment with Carla certainly doesn't
fit the crime.
No.
Bernardo and Carla decided the best way to dispose of evidence would be to dismember Leslie and encase each piece in cement.
You gotta know what you're doing to get into dismemberment.
Bernardo bought a dozen bags of cement at the hardware store the following day. He kept the receipts, which would prove he was going to take it back.
Yeah.
Which would prove damning at his trial. Bernardo used his grandfather's circular saw to cut up the body. They then made numerous trips to the dump, to dump the cement blocks in Lake Gibson, 10 miles south of Port Dalhousie. At least one of the blocks weighed 200 pounds and proved beyond the pair's patience or abilities to sink. It rested near the shore where a father and son on a fishing expedition discovered it on June 29, 1991. Leslie Mahaffey's orthodontic appliance proved definitive in identifying her. So, her retainer.
Yeah.
At least she was using it.
Well, yeah, but you remember when you were in school, like somebody would always wad their retainer up and
napkin. And a napkin, and throw it away.
Throw it away. Mm-hmm. With it. And you'd had to
My
dig
boys
there
did that before.
Because your parents were going to whoop your ass if they had to buy you another retainer.
Well, hell yeah, this thing's like $400 a piece.
I know.
Since we're on the topic
of retainers?
Well, no, of throwing things away. What about the cum rag? How did you handle that, Colonel, as a young man?
As a young man?
Yeah.
Well, I believe like every young man, you had the tube sock that you hid under your bed.
Oh, God. Okay.
The crunchy tube sock.
Same one over and over.
You got two boys. You know about the crunchy tube sock. Timmy, you know about the crunchy tube sock.
First of all, moving forward.
Yes, please move on. I'm sorry.
Wait a minute. Yeah, this is all you.
You opened up this line of questioning. I'm just saying.
And I regret it.
Every 13-year-old boy has had a crunchy tube sock under his bed.
I would like to apologize to our listening audience. Please move on.
So, on the afternoon of April 16th, 1992, Bernardo and Carla were driving through St. Catharines to look for potential victims. It was after school hours on the day before Good Friday. So, it was Good Thursday.
It was Monday,
Thursday.
Good
Friday Eve.
Yeah.
Monday, Thursday.
Huh?
Monday, Thursday.
Whatever. Students were still going home, but by and large, the streets were empty.
She ain't got no church, and she don't know nothing.
You know
about
that there's people who actually like his stories. I know it's hard to believe, but some of our listeners really like it. His retarded stories.
No, I'm just saying it's Monday Thursday. You don't know what it's called. The girl ain't been
Monday
in
Thursday
her whole life.
Monday Thursday is just stupid sounding. It's either Monday or it's Thursday. That's a dumb sounding thing. So, let me get on with it.
Okay, fine. I'm just trying to help you out with your religion. Get some religion, girl.
You really should look to him for spiritual advice.
I will look to him. I don't look to him for advice crossing the street.
Well, see, now that's where you're going wrong, girl. You need some churching. You need some churching. You need Jesus in your life is what you need, girl. You need Jesus. You need the Lord to come. You need to open up your heart. You need to open up your heart, girl, and let the Lord come in.
Have you ever tried Christianity,
maybe,
Brandy?
Have you ever tried it? Have you ever just tried loving something?
I mean, you've tried all sorts of, perverted sexual acts. Why don't you try the Lord?
Try the Lord.
As they pass...
The Lord's like a drug, devil.
Yeah.
It's like a drug that you become addicted to.
And you'll fill your heart full of love.
Full of love. You'll be bursting with the love.
And you'll be joyful.
Joyful. Oh, you sing.
And the most important thing, you're going to find your way to heaven.
Damn right. You'll see St. Peter right at the pearly gates.
At the gates.
What you guys are going to need to do.
And all you got to do is one time. One, asking for forgiveness of all the sinfulness you led in that sordid life you've had.
Oh, she might. But she may need it.
In there for free. The ticket's free. All you got to do is ask for it. Okay,
change your life. You need to change your life.
You need to get some church in
it. Close
Jesus
your collective cock holsters. I have got to get to Disney on Ice at 7:30.
Using the term cock holder is not going to get you to heaven.
It's not
going
to. St. Pete ain't liking this.
Thank you, Jerry Falwell. I got this. I'm good.
You just made Jesus cry.
What's more important?
You know, I'm sure it's not the first time.
What more is more important? Mickey Mouse on ice skates or
your eternal soul?
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse. So anyway, as they pass Holy Cross Secondary School, a main Catholic high school in the city's north end, they spot Kristen French. Finally, a decent name. Kristen French, a 15-year-old student, walking briskly.
Was she Christian and was she French?
I believe so.
She was a Jewish Canadian.
Her name was Kristen.
Oh, okay. That's a pretty name.
The couple pulled into the parking lot of the nearby Grace Lutheran Church, and Carla got out of the car, map in hand, pretending to need assistance.
She's a victim. I shouldn't have
My first church is Grace Lutheran Church. That's a coincidence.
As French looked up at the map, Bernardo attacked from behind, brandishing a knife and forcing her into the front seat of the car.
I would like to apologize because I didn't know she was a victim.
From her back seat.
Even though I wrote it.
Right.
Yeah, he did the
From her back
attack.
Seat, Carla controlled the girl by pulling down her hair. French took the same route home every day, taking about 15 minutes to get home in order to attend to her dog's needs. Soon after she should have arrived, her parents became convinced that she'd met with foul play and notified police. Within 24 hours, Niagara Regional Police, NRP, had assembled a team and searched the area along her route and found several witnesses who'd seen the abduction from different aspects, thus giving police a fairly clear picture. In addition, one of Kristen's shoes recovered from the parking lot underscored the seriousness of the abduction. The 3 days of Easter weekend, Bernardo and Homolka videotaped themselves as they tortured, raped, and sodomized Kristen French, forcing her to drink large amounts of alcohol and to behave submissively to Bernardo. At Bernardo's trial, Crown Prosecutor Ray Houlihan said that Bernardo always, his nickname was Hot Lips.
Mm-hmm. the prosecutor?
Yeah.
Sergeant. Hot Lips prosecutor Houlihan. Hot Lips Houlihan. Yeah.
Said that Bernardo always intended to kill her because she was never blindfolded and was capable of identifying her captors.
Oh, and by the way, he was also a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a dick and a killer.
Hot Lips was a dick?
No.
Or
Bernardo. Okay.
No, Bernardo.
Yeah, I said he planned to kill her because he never had her blindfolded and he was a dick.
When he was peckerhead.
Yeah.
The following day, the couple murdered French before going to the Homolkas for Easter dinner. So they killed her and then went and had ham. Carla testified at her trial that Bernardo had strangled French for exactly 7 minutes while she watched. Bernardo said Carla beat her with a rubber mallet because she tried to escape and that French ended up being strangled on a noose tied around her neck.
Can you kill someone with a rubber mallet?
I
believe you can.
You hit them hard enough.
Secured to a hope chest, which is ironic. Immediately thereafter, Carla went to fix her hair.
Well, yeah.
French, well.
You know what? This Carla's a bitch. I'm sorry.
Yeah, she is. Let's see. French's nude body was found in a ditch on April 30th, 1992 in Burlington, approximately 45 minutes from St. Catherine's and a short distance from the cemetery where Leslie Mahaffey was buried. It had been washed and the hair had been cut off. It was originally thought that the hair was removed as a trophy, but Homolka testified that the hair had been cut to impede identification.
Oh, give a haircut.
Yeah.
Well,
so you see why I don't like these people?
I know. Did I come to you and am I a part of their fan club?
I'm just saying, I don't like them. I don't like Paul or I don't like Carla. Especially I don't like Carla because she walks, but I don't like either one of them.
Well, and here's, okay, so this whole thing's going on and they're starting to get a little bit of a tension between them.
Mm-hmm.
Because while Carla's going on with this, she's realizing that she's not the focal point of his affection. She does, even
That's
though,
what's wrong with the picture.
No, I mean, she's jealous of these girls
she's
that he
jealous.
Keeps raping.
Yeah.
And she has proven herself to be pretty submissive over time, and she engaged in very painful sexual acts.
Which is fine if you want to do that, but don't go be picking off kids off the street.
But here's a... Okay, to me, what is this?
I mean, I have no problem with two consenting adults want to do BDSM. That's fine. But... when you start kidnapping innocent people and dragging them into it and making
the peculiar part of this.
All
right. Here's the peculiar part.
Paul, the peculiar part of her behavior is Paul starts beating on her.
Yeah.
Well, he starts beating the hell out of her.
You know, I don't have a lot of sympathy for her.
Yeah, but that proves to be his downfall.
Yeah.
Okay. Because he starts punching the shit out of this girl, and it, so regardless, all the insane shit that this Carla did,
mm-hmm.
Paul physically abusing her
was he's an asshole.
That was the hard limit for her.
No.
Yeah, that was it.
You're not going to hit me. You can kill half the town, but.
Now, she didn't leave. Strike me. She had two big ass black eyes, bruises all over, but she didn't leave him.
And her reasoning was, Brandy,
I love him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, and she goes over to her parents intervened. They see all this, they see her with the black eyes and bruises. And they get Carla to take refuge in the home of one of her sister Lori's friends, whose husband was a policeman. So now, she's like, the parents are jumping in.
Mm-hmm.
And all this because this dumb shit, he poison women, choke women, rape women, do whatever. And she goes along with it, and she's doing it, too. And then he was doing rough sex to her, but she can't take... And really, it was jealousy is what it was.
Right.
So anyway, now she's living with a Toronto cop. And this was before the Toronto police had all this forensic evidence to convict him as a Scarborough rapist. So in early February, about a month later... The police investigation of Paul intensifies, and both the Toronto Police and the Ontario Green Ribbon Task Force wanted to interview Carla. They also wanted to fingerprint her and question her about a Mickey Mouse watch that was very similar to Kristen French's watch.
Yeah, so she had a watch in her possession that one of the victims, the latest victims.
Yeah, now initially a bunch of detectives interviewed her for like 5 hours, and the questions they asked, Carla understood that Carla realized that they were tying Paul up with these Scarborough rapes.
The gig is up.
And she's pretty nervous, so she decides to get herself a good lawyer, and while she was a veterinary assistant, she'd taken care of this guy's dog, this guy George Walker, so she calls him up. So over a period of a lot of interviews, George Walker realizes that she was not necessarily the innocent victim that she was painting herself out to be. But he didn't really understand what her role had been in here.
To the extent that it was.
Yeah, the extent it was. So even a lawyer can't figure out how guilty is she. Because she was a very, charming and persuasive woman. She had perfect 36C breasts.
Well, and, give her props.
Well, that'll throw credit her off when you're talking to her. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Carla was shocked and afraid. But she took care of her anxiety with, much like you do, Timmy, large amounts of painkillers and alcohol.
And Xanax.
Yeah.
There you go.
Now, on February 19th, the police decided to get a search warrant for Paul and Carla's home, and they found an amazing. It was a treasure trove of evidence that they found in here.
Wow. What'd they find?
Oh, Paul had a written description of every one of the Scarborough rapes, an extensive library of books and videos on sexual deviation.
Well, now, let's not cast dispersion. Just because you have that don't mean you're a killer, right?
No, you're fine, Timmy.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
you. You're fine. Your sexual deviation does not mean that you're going to kill somebody.
Thank you, Colonel.
He had books on pornography and books about serial killers. And they found one brief video that indicated there had been more than one lascivious person in the Bernardo household.
Hmm.
Quite explicitly, the short video showed Carla as an enthusiastic lesbian in sexual acts with two other women.
Some of these were available online, I think.
Yeah, give the Colonel a minute here.
Yeah. They had a video of her masturbating. It was I think it was available on like Live Links or something.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I don't know if it was Live Links, but it was on some website. But I don't know if it's still available or not.
Well, a week later, the attorney and Maury Siegel, he was a plea bargain specialist for the Attorney General, discussed the deal for Carla. Carla would get 12 years in prison.
See, that's bullshit.
For each of the two victims, but the sentence would be served concurrently. So he really, in this. Listen, is this an important distinction to make? Concurrent and consecutive.
Mm-hmm.
If you get sentenced concurrently, that means
you got one sentence.
You're serving two for one.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a two-year sentence concurrently, mm-hmm. that means after a year you've served them both. But if they're consecutive, that means you got to serve one before you serve the other.
I think our audience is pretty sharp, and they know the difference between concurrent
well,
and
consecutive. Well, not all of our lawyers have passed the bar like you did to me.
I'm just saying, our listeners are pretty
sharp. He didn't bright. Pass
the bar. Oh, that's right. He didn't.
I have. Where did you get your guy's law degree? I just like what I'd like to know.
I'm a pretty well-known jailhouse lawyer.
I know you're a minister. You got your minister license online.
I did.
You can marry people, which is kind of scary.
Now, think about this. I think about everything this...
See, how do you get a minister's license when you're going to hell? That's what I don't understand. She's going to pull that. You know, she's going to pull that when
you
she gets
up. You know what she likes?
She gets up to St.
Like
Peter's.
It's like the girl trying to...
Yeah, I got this online.
You know, it's like the girl trying to get into the bar with her sister's fake ID.
Yeah,
she's going to be going up to the pearly gates, and okay. she's going to be like, no, I got this, and they're going to look at it like...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this ain't going to work for you, devil. So why don't you think about it? I mean, just think about it. Listeners, I would encourage you to encourage the devil.
Pray for Brandy. Yeah. Pray for Brandy's soul.
Yeah, put some on the Facebook page. We're thinking about you. We're praying for your eternal soul and hoping you don't get the eternal damnation. It's inevitably coming your way.
Your thoughts and prayers are with us, Brandy.
Yeah.
I quit listening.
So, anyway.
That is why you're going to hell.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Just I doubt if that's the reason.
The truth shall set you free, devil. Yeah, listen here. We're telling you the truth.
The truth does set you free.
It does set you free. So anyway, let's get back to Carla.
Could we?
Devil, you distract us. Anyway, a week later now, they're trying to work out this plea bargain. Carla's going to get 12 years in prison for each one. But here's the thing. She'd be eligible for parole in a little over 3 years with good behavior. The government even agreed to contact a parole board on Carla's behalf, pointing out to them the importance of a testimony against Paul. They didn't really want her. They wanted Paul because he was doing the rapes, he was doing the killings, he was doing... Carla was involved, but
he was a raping and a killing.
He was a raping and a killing fool. And he was trying to get Carla to serve out her sentence in a psychiatric prison. The trial was brief.
You know, 2 years is... way too much to spend for killing four people.
And she waived most of her rights in exchange for leniency. Carla would agree to tell the absolute truth, nothing but the truth, the whole truth, about her involvement in the crimes and everything she knew about them. Carla agreed unconditionally to these terms. Now, in early March, Carla checked into a psychiatric hospital for assessment. She was given heavy doses of drugs and insisted on being given even larger doses. And then she wrote a letter to her parents. She got the nerve, and she said, "Dear Mom, Dad, and Lori, this is the hardest letter I've ever had to write, and you'll probably all hate me once you've read it. I've kept this inside for so long that I just can't lie to you anymore. Both Paul and I are responsible for Tammy's death. Paul was, air quotes, in love with her and wanted to have sex with her. He wanted me to help him. He wanted me to get sleeping pills from work and drug her with. He threatened me and physically and emotionally abused me when I refused.
Poor thing.
No words I say can make you understand what he put me through. So stupidly I agreed to it.
My bad.
But something, maybe the combination of drugs and the food she ate that night, or, you know, just the drugs.
Yeah, just a horse tranquilizers.
Mm-hmm. Caused her to vomit. I tried valiantly, so hard to save her. I am so sorry.
She tried valiantly.
Well, she called 911, and she didn't call them back and say, forget it. She didn't do it that time. She let him come.
Yeah, but no words I can say can bring her back. I'll gladly give my life for hers. I don't expect you to ever forgive me.
You know, I think your family would probably gladly give their life for hers, too.
Yeah, for I will never forgive myself. Carla, and she put two little X's and O's there.
Aww.
That's hugs and kisses for those of you.
It is hugs and kisses. Aww.
Yeah, so that's where she... that's where we get up to her trial.
Mm-hmm.
So Carla's trial was a media circus.
Well, yeah, she was hot and she was naked and it was videotape. And
yeah, so it began on June 28th, 1993. In court, she wore a schoolgirl's tartan kilt and blazer.
That's nice. That's nice. Yeah.
Carla now.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah, me and Timmy just
Carla now looked somewhat matronly. Her
Mate.
Her boobs were bigger.
But her clothes were out of place with the false eyelashes, the deep red lipstick, heavy caked foundation.
So you're saying she looked like a matronly whore.
If she was matronly, then she looked like a matronly Lolita.
Oh, Lolita. Like her Lolitas, you gotta watch out for them.
Her psychiatric report...
Does matronly just mean big boobed?
I think it's manly. I always think it was like a, you know...
No, I think it's matronly.
Older.
So the devil be matronly.
You know, you think of a word.
Because you're 40, right? You're 40?
No, that's when you're 40, you're a man. You become a man.
Oh.
Matronly would be like 35, 36.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Stop talking.
Well, I mean, you got kind of large bosoms, right? And you're old.
You so. Did say plural. You did use the plural for that.
Bosoms?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the French word
bosoms.
For breast.
Oh, my God. Okay.
For those who don't... Well,
you didn't know he spoke French, did you? Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Her psychiatric report helped set the stage for the plea bargain deal. Dr. Malcolm, the psychologist, concluded that Carla knew what was happening, but she felt totally helpless and unable to act in her own defense or in anyone else's defense. She was, in my opinion, paralyzed with fear, and in that state became obedient and self-serving.
She was self-serving. I agree with
that. Yeah. At the end of the trial, the media people left allowed only to report a few of the details so that the jury pool that would be selected in the future for Paul's trial would not be tainted by information they heard or read before the trial.
She said taint.
Yeah. I did. Carla left the trial after receiving the agreed sentence and prepared herself for what was sure to be an ordeal, the trial of her husband, Paul Bernardo. The trial of Paul Bernardo was delayed for 2 years after his arrest. One of the reasons for the delay was that Bernardo had placed his first lawyer, Ken Murray, in a very difficult ethical situation. Bernardo had given Murray the videotapes that he and Carla had made of their adventures, believing that by doing so, they would never get into the hands of prosecutors. He is stupid.
He never heard of discovery, I guess.
I guess. Let's see. However, the prosecutors knew of the videotapes from Carla and had wiretapped Murray's conversations with Bernardo, which is illegal here in the United States, but evidently not there, right?
Well, yeah. Well, it depends on what state. In terms of wiretapping, you mean?
Well, I mean, he can't, you know, attorney-client privilege. They can't tap that.
No. But at the same time, his lawyer was acting unethically. I mean, I don't know what the rules are in Canada.
Right.
But if his lawyer has evidence,
right,
he's required to turn it over.
Eventually, the pressure increased, and Murray had to do something about the videotapes in his possession. The videotapes were turned over to the prosecution, and Murray withdrew from the case. Veteran defense lawyer John Rosen took his place as Bernardo's lawyer. This series of activities alone caused a delay of 1 year in the start of a trial. In May 1995, Bernardo's trial began in Judge Patrick Lesage's courtroom, with the videotapes as crucial pieces of evidence. Bernardo faced 2 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of aggravated sexual assault, 2 counts of forcible confinement, 2 counts of kidnapping, and 1 count of performing an indignity on a human body.
Oh, he performed some indignities, all right.
Odd. The prosecutor, Ray Houlihan, Hot Lips is back, began with a segment showing Carla naked masturbating with the camera focused on her mommy parts.
Yeah. Woohoo!
That's a vagina, Chuck, if you didn't know what she was referring to.
Oh, vagina.
Her nether naughty.
Her
JJ.
JJ?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Nick Prawn in
Her Love Total.
Mm-hmm. Her happy place.
Happy place. Her little
Your
man,
happy place.
The little man in the canoe.
No, that's not the same thing.
Creepy cavern.
Nick Prawn in Lethal Marriage.
Nick Prick.
Yeah. Describes the electrifying effect the video had on the courtroom.
I bet it did.
I bet it did.
Several people had to go out to smoke.
Yeah, people.
Gasps of surprise and disgust.
They're going to have that tube sock out.
Perhaps even shock. Along with plenty of embarrassed giggles could be heard throughout the courtroom.
That'd be awesome.
As the camera lingered on Homolka's exposed body for several minutes as she stimulated herself. For the previous 2 years, ever since her arrest, Homolka's face had been almost as well known as the prime minister's.
Now her vajayjay was as well known. Mm-hmm.
She had been seen on television in footage taken at her wedding, with her friends, and at her trial. But few people in the courtroom that day were expecting to see a triple X-rated tape.
Nobody thought they'd see her vajayjay.
Yeah.
A close study of the country's most infamous women in a variety of... One of the country's most infamous women in a variety of sexually explicit positions.
Yeah, it's hard to... Then it's hard to come back and say, I was a victim. You're sitting there twiddling yourself.
When you got the... When you're flashing the finger hut to the people.
Yeah.
God. It seemed like an odd way for the prosecutor to treat his star witness. However, Hot Lips explained that the dialogue in the videos had been scripted by Bernardo and was a good example of how he forced his will on Carla.
He wrote a script like I did.
Yeah, he did.
I hope she read it better than you guys do.
She cannot. Well, it's kind of hard to do when you're, busy twiddling.
When you got to, when she was playing with the meat wallet.
What? You're looking up names, aren't you? You look that up on your phone. You're so ridiculous.
I don't like the term vagina. It seems too medical and sterile. And I don't like vajayjay because it's so... I mean, so call it what it is. I mean, call it axe wound.
Axe wound.
Meat wallet. I'm going to take your phone. That's disgusting and derogatory.
Yeah, the penis fly trap.
That's funny.
Cave of Wonders.
Okay. Stop talking.
The Pink Fortress.
Oh. Okay.
And Hippo Jean.
The tape was clearly geared to sexually excite Bernardo.
What else,
Carla?
Juice box.
As Carla talked of procuring 13-year-old virgins for him to rape.
Daddy played a jukebox. Juice box.
The whole dialogue was an articulation of Bernardo's sexual fantasies with the goal of bringing him to a climax. Carla played the role of the sex slave and Bernardo was the king. As more of these videotapes of Leslie, Kristen, and Jane were shown, the jury was provided with indisputable and powerful evidence of Paul Bernardo's sexual depravity.
Baby cannon.
As if that were not enough, Carla was called to the stand to elaborate on what jurors had just seen and heard. What she described in her relationship with Paul was an escalating theme of sexual degradation, similar to when Paul had begun with other girlfriends before he met Carla.
So what you're saying is he abused her bearded oyster.
In Carla, the willing victim, the degradation knew no boundaries. He made her wear a dog's choke collar. He inserted a wine bottle into her nether naughty.
Oh, no, that's
wait,
not...
Wait. Let's go back. What kind of wine bottle?
It was a Merlot.
What do you...
What year?
I don't know. Is there ever a good year for Merlot?
Well, I think when you go to the liquor store, do you say...
Well, I mean, it's a big difference if you're going to get some,
What goes with the stench trench?
Was it a nice bottle of rosé? Yeah. Was it a Magdol 2020? I mean, it makes a difference.
I just said it was a bottle of rosé.
I'm having a pink taco for dinner.
And he almost strangled her with a wire cord to satisfy his sadistic fantasies.
Almost.
Paul told her that his choke fantasy was important to him and it wouldn't hurt anybody, except for the people that it killed. He told her that she was nothing without him and he would call her names like slut, bitch, and the C word that I hate. When the defense had its turn in the courtroom, John Rosen attacked Carla's credibility. His goal was to show that she was not the victim she portrayed herself to be, but a willing participant in the couple's murder and rape spree. He was, at least, successful in showing Carla to be a morally vacuous woman with no remorse for her part in these crimes.
So her soul was much like a vagina.
In particular.
What's another word for vagina?
No.
Another word? Well, you got the chasm of doom.
Okay. In particular, Kristen's murder had been committed at a particular time so that Carla and Paul could spend Easter dinner with Carla's parents. Immediately after Kristen was strangled, Carla left to blow dry her hair.
Well, she's big on blow drying her hair. She is. In the middle of murders.
It was not immediately clear at the trial, but it became clear shortly after that Carla had cleverly manipulated the circumstances of her cooperation with the government to engineer one of the worst deals that the Canadian government had ever made with a criminal witness.
I'd say that was a pretty bad deal.
Well, for the government, yeah. Regardless of Carla's degree of guilt or innocence and the deal she had made with authorities, it did not save Bernardo from the outrage that he kindled in the minds of the jurors. On September 1st, 1995, Bernardo was convicted on all charges against him regarding the kidnapping, rapes, and murders of Leslie Mahaffey and Kristen French. He also faced trials in the death of Tammy Homolka and the serial rapes in Scarborough. Under Canadian law, Bernardo can apply for parole after 25 years in prison, although it is unlikely that he will be successful in any parole bid.
So what you're saying is...
No, what I'm saying is it's Timmy's turn to wrap this up.
He was not nice to her panty hamster.
Oh, my God.
Moneymaker.
The moneymaker. You know...
Love taco.
When you take a trip to the Grandest Canyon...
To Disney on Ice sometime.
Okay, let's talk... So let me wrap this up. So Paul... During the interrogation of Carla in 1993, police said that Carla had told him that the police that Paul had once bragged to her that he had raped as many as 30 different women, twice the number of the assaults police had suspected him of committing. And she just had a name for him. She had a pet name for him, the Happy Rapist.
So,
yeah, sweet. He had been, so when he had was found guilty, he was kept in segregation for his own safety. Nonetheless, he had been attacked and harassed while in prison. He once was punched in the face by another inmate.
That's a bummer.
While returning from the shower. That was in 1996. In 1999, five convicts tried to storm the segregation unit to get a hold of him and beat him, but he lived. The riot squad had to come in and use gas to disperse the crowd. So he's not a very popular guy in
prison. I bet they turned his poor anus into just a set of meat curtains, Demi.
Dirty flower.
Mm-hmm.
The Toronto Star reported on February 24th, 2006, that Bernardo had admitted having sexually assaulted at least 10 other women in the attacks not previously attributed to him. So when we had these gaps in his... perhaps he was they were just went unreported. But in 2006 he gave an interview in prison suggesting that he had reformed and would make a good parole candidate. He was not eligible until 2010, they didn't give him much of a chance. He wasn't paroled in 2010. He's not eligible again until 2020. So we have that to look forward to in a few years.
Maybe he'll be dead by then.
But they don't think he'll ever get out. In September of 2013, he was moved to the Kingston Penitentiary. He was moved from the Kingston Penitentiary because it was closing to the Millhaven Institute in Bath, Canada. And he's kept in a segregation unit. In 2015, Paul reportedly applied for a day parole in Toronto, you know, just to go out, do a little shopping,
watch a movie.
But that was not approved. In 2015, also November 2015, just a few months ago, Bernardo self-published an ebook on Amazon.
Well.
Called, and it's titled A Mad World Order. Which he had 631 pages of violent fictional thriller.
Jesus.
Which made references to characters, Illuminati, and the Mexican drug cartel. I mean, he
sounds like he's quite the writer. So.
Well, he published his little book on Amazon as an ebook, and Amazon took it down when they figured out what was going on. But it became a bestseller. It became a bestseller on Amazon.
Even Amazon has standards.
Yeah. But did
it have a title?
I don't have. A mad World Order, in which he talks about the 631 pages. He talks about
pretty paying attention.
It was a fictional thriller talking about the Illuminati and characters as such as the Mexican drug cartel members and Russian militants. So he's quite the imagination arc, little Paul.
See, now, the colonel
but he's a prick, and he's still alive, and I don't like him.
The colonel, while we're talking about Amazon, you can get on Amazon.
We're talking about pricks.
The colonel got a self-help book for men who can't find their way around the
erectile dysfunction,
the lady parts. If you haven't,
how is your before I get into
it's
car,
fine. It's
how,
fine.
How is your impotence problem?
It is fine. And anyway, for the men who have trouble working their way around, finding their way around the back cave. The colonel has written a self-help book describing the parts, describing what they do, how the women plumbing operate. And I...
How have you done that?
Well, years of research.
Because you don't know.
And the title of the book, just look up the history, Colonel. The title of the book is called Lawrence of Arabia.
All that just to get that pun in.
Yeah. I know, right?
Yeah, now, here's a question for you, Devil.
Can I get into Carla first, and then you can ask her your question?
In the what?
Can I tell?
Get into Carla?
Can I finish up what?
Everybody else has.
Oh, I thought you were finished.
No. I want to finish up with Carla, because this bitch, she's still alive. And, you know, I don't like her. Paul's still alive. At least he's incarcerated writing. He's putting, you know, he's being creative writing books. Carla, after her 1995 testimony against Paul... she was sent to the Kingston Prison for Women. Her mother had a breakdown. So, sorry about her mom. Her mom did have a rough way to go, losing her 15-year-old daughter.
That'll cause a breakdown.
But anyway, she was moved to Joliet Institution, which is a medium security prison in Joliet, Quebec, in 1997, a facility referred to as Club Fed by the critics, so it must be an easy place. There she had an affair with Linda Verono, who was serving time for a series of armed robberies.
She was hot, too.
And no, I don't think she was. She was serving time. She was kind of butch. Well, unless you like that sort of thing, Colonel. Anyway, she served a series of... was serving time for armed robberies, and when she got out, she reoffended just so she could be back with Carla. So, you know, she had a good thing. She knew a good thing when she had it.
She knew which side of her honey bun was buttered.
While being evaluated in 2000, Carla told her psychiatrist that she did not consider her relationship with a homosexual relationship, because Lydia was in the process of undergoing a sex change. Now, on January 11, 2008, the Canadian press reported that letters written by Linda to Lydia had appeared on eBay, and they were people were bidding on their love letters. It was going up for $1,600.
By Linda to Lydia?
Yeah, by Carla to Lydia. I'm sorry. By Carla to Lydia. They'd been writing each other love letters when Lydia got out. And she put those letters on eBay, and people started bidding. It got up to $1,600. But there was some public outrage over Carla's plea deal, and it continues today. People are really upset at the government that they let her off with such a slap on the wrist, because she was released from prison. She was released after just a few years, serving just a few years, and... she was released July 4th, 2005, on Independence Day.
Yeah, it was Independence Day for her.
So she didn't serve very much time at all after all these terrible acts that she committed with her husband, Paul. She ended up changing her name. She got married, moved to the Caribbean.
Guadalupe,
and they had a baby. Her and her new husband had a baby.
Three babies,
and changed her name to Leanne Teale, T-E-A-L-E. Now, she was trying to get her criminal record erased and have her so it would cover up. It wouldn't show up in background checks when she applied for jobs and such.
That's too freaking bad.
But it did. She was able to have it partially expunged, but she can't get jobs working with children or other vulnerable people. like anyone alive.
Right.
Anybody who might be able to be killed and raped.
In 2010, public safety direct minister Vic Toews said an agreement had been reached between all federal parties to pass a bill that would prevent notorious offenders like Carla from obtaining a pardon in the future. So she got pardoned for her dastardly deeds. In 2012, she was living in Guadeloupe under the name Leanne Bordelis with her husband and three children. But it's now believed that Carla is back living in Quebec. So, Carla, if you're listening, screw you. I don't like you. Yeah. Any words for Carla, Randy?
Fuck you.
Colonel, any words for Carla if she's listening?
No words for Carla at all. I don't want the girl to come and kill me and chop. I do have a question for the devil, though, as we was throwing all these names about, because, you know, I don't like, you know, the
use profanity.
And men tend, you can back me up here, Tim, you tend to name your own member, don't you? You have a name for him. I mean,
the colonel
has the mighty sword.
Right.
And do women do that, devil?
Sometimes.
Do you have, like, the notorious VAG or something like that? I mean, a name for the thing?
What does your friends call theirs?
I don't know.
You don't talk about that stuff?
I do, but I don't think my friends call theirs...
By any names?
There are no names. A rose by any other name.
Oh, see, now you'll be, you know, out with your friends or something, and somebody say, "Hey, I got to go take care of Earl here." He yelling, he barking. I got to
use a little girl's room because we're not Neanderthals.
Well, I'm just saying. I think the notorious VAG is a good one.
I like that one too.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad.
Any final?
I'm gonna make that your new nickname.
Any final thoughts? Any final thoughts, Brandy, on Paul or Carla, the Ken and Barbie killers?
No, I'm glad we did this one finally. It was a good one.
Well, it depressed me. I don't like these people.
I have to go to Disney on Ice now with all this, so.
Are you going to see... do you expect to see... Well, you said you'd probably see Goofy.
I expect to see Toy Story. Woody and Buzz and...
Oh!
Jesse. I expect to see them.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do they do the Cars series?
I don't know if they'll do Cars or not.
Well, I hope you have a good time.
I will.
Yeah. Colonel, any final thoughts?
I have no thoughts on Disney on Ice.
Or anything.
Or really anything, because it's lunchtime and I'm hungry.
Yeah, this podcast has been quite lengthy, I would say.
It's been a lengthy one, like kind of like
and
Colonel Mighty
going.
Sword. But
And it keeps going.
Yeah. Okay, Brandy, where can people find us?
People can find us on Facebook.
Yeah, check us out on Facebook. Leave a message. Leave a comment on the podcast. We check it every day. We check it all the time. We check it 24 hours a day. We're probably checking out right now.
iTunes.
We have an intern checking it right this moment.
Please leave us a review on iTunes. That's how other people find us.
Stitcher.
Yeah, we're on Stitcher.
Twitter,
at HistoryDweebs1.
We also have Dude That's Weird.
Dude That's Weird. It's a Facebook page as well as it's a crime Facebook page.
Yes.
And as well as the History Dweeb podcast group you can join on Facebook. So
yep.
We're all over the damn place.
And don't forget we're going to be appearing at TimmyCon.
TimmyCon is coming up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So feel free to go. Contact me if you want to know what the appropriate attire is, because you should be dressed like me.
Yeah, and that's not going to be easy.
All right, we'll see you all next time on History Dweebs. Bye,
good
everybody.
Day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.